Hey, well, there we are. There we are. We are on the 8th of April, waiting for a solar eclipse. In our parts of the country, here in North Dakota, Bismarck, North Dakota, we will have a partial solar eclipse, of course. In other parts, they'll see the whole thing, but we have rain today. I am replaying back an episode from 2 years ago with a good friend of mine in San Diego named Laura Kane, and I love this episode so much. And I have to explain it real quick. The audio is just not the best because it was recorded on my phone. So sit back and enjoy this. A tremendous lady. There is a way out. Once again, I am not a expert. I don't have any certificates or anything like that. I just, my strength is my guess. And you will hear from this one in just a few. If anyone feels like they're on the fence, they may drink too much. Maybe they have a neighbor or anything like that who would maybe benefit from listening to these episodes. There is a way out. So anyway, I apologize for the quality of this audio, but just if you listen through, it is tremendous.
Can you hear me?
Hey, oh my God, yes.
I think we're connected.
Yay.
But can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, let me turn this thing up. Okay, here's the thing.
What?
I'm just telling everybody that, once again, connecting to this app is probably five times harder than the first time anyone ever landed on the moon for the first time.
I know. What the heck? I had to sign up like four different times.
This is There Is a Way Out. My name is Bromo, and I am not an expert. I don't have a certificate. I just have 13 years of experience. And what I'm hoping for in this podcast, and I've been doing this for a little bit, this is my 10th one. I did it 2.5 years ago, and I did 30 of them at another radio station. But the strength of this podcast is the guests that I have on, not me. I mean, and the stories that I have from people who come on here are of strength and hope. And one of my favorite people of all time, and we just reconnected after how many years, Laura? Let's see, you've been sober 15 years, correct?
Yeah, yes. And like 10 years, or maybe even 12.
Well, we knew each other. We first met back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And she and I were in radio then. We still are. And she became a very pivotal part of a morning show that went on to become Hall of Fame. I don't think I've ever talked to a member of a Hall of Fame of anything. Kane is her name. I hope you're okay with me mentioning your full name.
You can do anything you want.
Excellent. So Laura Kane will know what I'm saying is true. When you become a member of a very special show, about 99.99% of your life is on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Part of the beauty of a show that works, because we all become friends. We all live with each other on the air and a lot of hours off. So
you know what? It's like we spent more time with the people on the air than we did with our own families.
Absolutely. Isn't that something? I've been told that many times.
Yes.
So the good, the bad, the mysterious, and then the dark. And for me, of course, a lot of my dark was made towards the tail end of when I was on DSC, and then I disappeared. Laura Kane is probably one of the most well-known radio names in San Diego. Once again, Hall of Fame name. And Laura, you want to tell everybody when your demons started kicking in, and just go ahead and let everybody know your story if you want.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, Dave, by the way. I'm very honored.
Hey, real quick, she had me on Tuesday on Laura Kane at Dark, Laura Kane After Dark. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
With a real charming guy named Eric. And I was probably the most honored that I've ever been. And it was at 11 o'clock my time. So my voice sounded like I hadn't had 3 days of sleep.
It was very sexy sounding.
Well, that's the first. I've never had anyone tell me that. I was on for their show for quite a while. They let me actually tell my story. And now it's my turn to have you tell everyone your story if you want.
Okay, I will. And, you know, obviously feel free to jump in. And I hope you were okay with me jumping into your story every once in a while, because I was glued to every word that you said. And like I said on my podcast, you will help someone tonight or whoever listens to this the next day. And lo and behold, you got a hold of somebody that you did help it directly from listening to that on the podcast. So I'm hoping that by being on your podcast, somebody may listen, be a woman, be a mom who can relate, and maybe I can help.
I appreciate that. Unlike you guys, where you had it on YouTube, where I could see the expressions of Eric falling asleep while I was telling my story.
Don't pay attention to him.
No, he's a great guy. And I was really lucky to be on your show. And I was watching you, and I watched you nod through certain tales of what our disease is like. And it was kind of riveting to watch your reaction.
I forgot that it was on YouTube. That's right. I mean, how fun is that to watch me nodding while you're talking? Not much to watch, but yes, I mean, as an alcoholic addict, I can relate to so many of the things that you were saying, even the story about your friend who eventually committed suicide as a result of this disease. I have a similar story. So I was really relating to that and how it really kicked in at that point. It was like, oh my God, this happened to me too. So a lot of the same things. I mean, even though your story only deals with alcohol, that was your one addiction, but it was very strong. Mine is alcohol and a variety of other things that are in the mix. So is that okay to talk about? Or is this like,
listen,
talk about anything else but alcohol?
Here's real quick. The reason why she said that, and I'll explain to some people who are maybe new to our world. There are some places you can go, and Laura, you'll know this, whether they'll tell you right off the bat, look, we just want to talk about alcohol in certain ways. And then there's NA meetings, which is like narcotics and that's drugs. But my firm belief on this, Laura, is addiction is addiction. I don't care if it's booze or drugs. So absolutely. Yeah, please. You have open game, whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. Well, let me start with saying when I was young, my parents worked together. I had a brother and a sister, and alcohol was celebrated in my family. Like they'd bring out the booze every holiday, and like my mom and her friends would have drinkies and ciggies after dropping the kids off at school. You know, like it was a fun thing. So when family members would come over, I'd often take like little sips of the alcohol to see what it tasted like. And it was always super gross, so I didn't really like it. But I kind of liked that little burning that I got when it went down my throat.
Yeah.
So, well, then move forward to when I was 15. I went to a party at my friend Belle's house, and her parents were gone. So it was a sleepover. We invited boys over. They brought these pre-made bottles of Long Island iced tea over.
Oh, boy.
Oh my God. I guess I drank the whole bottle. I didn't even realize I was drinking the whole bottle halfway through. I was probably super buzzed and drunk by that point. And then all I remember was being all of a sudden I was outside on the grass in my own puke with somebody like trying to get me to be awake, like, hello, hello. And I was like, don't rock the boat. Don't rock the boat.
It's right.
It feels so sick. So that was my first like real drunk. That I got blackout drunk, waking up in my own puke. But did that stop me? Of course not. It just, I was like, okay, well, this was fun. It was super fun. Drinking was fun. We went to parties. We drank. Back in high school, it wasn't drinking and drove drunk lots of times home from parties. And it wasn't like even something I thought about back then, which sucks. So then I went to college, and then, oh my God, then the real party started. Obviously alcohol was always there. Kegers, sorority, fraternity parties. Then I was introduced to cocaine, and my boyfriend at the time, his sister was much older than he was. And we went over to her house, and she's like, have you guys ever tried crystal meth? And no, I don't know what that is. And so she's like, oh, it'll just keep you up all night. We can play Monopoly all night long. And so I was like, okay. So, oh my God, did that ever hurt going in my nose? I'll never forget the burn. It was pain. Tears were coming down my eyes because it was so painful. But
did your jaw hurt the next morning? Because I've only done it once because somebody put it in my beer and then I sniffed a line later on that night. Only time I've ever done it in my life. The next day I woke up, it was like somebody slugged me in my mouth.
Oh, because you're grinding so hard?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes, that. And the next day, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't poop. I couldn't go to the bathroom. I couldn't throw up. Like, I wanted it out of me, but I couldn't get it out. And like, I couldn't go to sleep. And it was a nightmare. I'm like, never going to do this again. This is horrible. Blah, blah, blah. Well, a couple years later, I met a woman at a conference. Long story short, she says, do you like to make jewelry? I said, oh, I love making jewelry. I love crafty things like that. She's like, well, come on over. Well, she had crystal meth. And did I turn it away? Of course not. I tried.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Tried it again. And we were up for days making this hideous jewelry. Now looking back, that we were going to try to sell. And we were trying to set up a company, you know, like all these ideas that you get and all these projects that you start when you're on crystal meth and you never get around to finishing. So I did that off and on, like every other weekend for a while. I would buy $40 worth, and it would last me, because crystal meth lasted a whole lot longer than cocaine, and it was cheaper too. So I did that up until I was about 30. Then I got pregnant, and I found out 5 months into my pregnancy. Oh, first, I should preface this by saying, when I was 30 years old, my father passed away suddenly.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
He was like, oh my God. Dave, he was the greatest guy. He would make you laugh. He was such a funny person and such a good dad, such a great dad, like a dad of all dads. He loved his kids more than anything. He spent all weekend with us all the time. He was my best friend. I talked to him about everything, and then he was gone.
Yeah.
And then 3 months later, I got pregnant. And 5 months into the pregnancy, I found out that my son had a birth defect. Very serious birth defect. He was born with what's called an omphalocele, which is his insides were growing on the outside of his body, and they through his belly button. So he didn't his stomach was open, and there were all these intestines were on the outside. And
the only thing I can think of is somebody coming up to me at a party saying, "Hey, you want to see my intestines?"
I know, right? I mean, my God. Well, I'll get to that in a minute, but he needed surgery. So I was pretty good during my pregnancy. I remember I smoked one cigarette during it and I felt bad, but that was when I found out he was really, really jacked up and I didn't know what to do. I had one cigarette. That's it. I didn't drink during the pregnancy. I didn't have any drugs. Of course, in my mind, I thought, oh my God, is this my fault for all the shit that I've done? And I'm sure I was drunk when I got pregnant. I'm positive I was.
Oh,
wow. So was this a direct result? And the doctor convinced me, no, this is strictly genetic. It happens through the genes, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I still blame, you know, a lot of alcoholism and addiction is guilt and shame. So
I was pretty
guilty about that. But he was born, he had surgery. They fixed him, they sewed him back up, put all his intestines back in and gave him this pretty little belly button that looks like an asterisk. And he was a pretty sick baby for the first year. He had three surgeries. So I was really busy with him. So I didn't really party too much. When he was out of the woods, then it was back on big time.
Oh, yeah. It was like you never left, right?
My God. No. Mm-mm.
Hey, real quick. Say that line again. Addiction. All of the addiction is a lot of guilt and shame, correct?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why we hide it. We hide it from others. That's why a lot of us don't ever get help. That's why I didn't get help for the longest time. Because meantime, during all of this, I'm on the air as well. And my pregnancy was on the air. Finding out I was pregnant was on the air. And it's a lot of pressure. Being judged constantly like that, you know, when you're on there, it's super fun at some time, most of the time. And it's great to be recognized and stuff and have fans, but it's a lot of negativity as well. And it gets to you.
Now, did you realize how many people were tuning in, listening to you, not only your show, but your life? Did that make sense to you at that point?
Did it, like, how many people were listening?
Did you comprehend? Like,
no.
For me, it didn't. Yeah, for me,
no.
Me neither. But you realize now, of course, how many lives you've touched. But back then, you were just telling your life in front of five or six people in the studio, correct?
Oh, yeah. I never thought about the audience. I mean, I did think about the audience, but I never thought of, like, thousands of people listening. I just thought I was talking to my friends in the office. You know what I
yes.
mean?
Yes, yes.
I'm sure you do. And so I partied. I was still drinking. I drank probably a bottle and a half a night, maybe two bottles of wine. Always white wine. Then I got pregnant with my daughter.
Okay.
This is a whole different story. And this is where the shame really comes in and the guilt. Because when I was 7 weeks into my pregnancy, it was a like a, oh, I'm pregnant type of pregnancy. I did a line of cocaine at a friend's house because I thought, well, it's just like caffeine, right?
Right.
When I did that and I realized I have a life growing inside of me, I was horrified by myself. I couldn't believe how sickening I was to do that. And so I remember I was on the floor of my apartment. I was crying. I tried to call a 1-800 cocaine number, addiction number. And I remember talking to somebody, but they didn't really give me much relief. They didn't really lead me anywhere. I guess I wasn't ready at that time. But throughout the pregnancy, I drank here and there. I smoked here and there. I did actually do one more line of cocaine when I was like 7 months pregnant. And I remember the drug dealer who I went over to his house. He was like, are you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, I'm even being judged by the drug dealer now.
Oh, like, man.
And oh, my God. I couldn't explain it. Like, I couldn't explain to myself, like, why am I doing this? I know better. I know better than this. But why do I do it? I didn't understand it. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
And so then I had Evan and she was perfect. She came out perfectly. Thank God. Even though I wasn't the perfect mother at the time. When she was born, I breastfed her for the least amount of time I possibly could because I wanted to get back on the horse. I wanted to drink. I wanted to use drugs. I wanted to party. So I breastfed her for maybe 3 weeks and then I was done because I wanted a party. I totally jacked her possibility of having more breast milk. I selfishly stopped it because it was about me. It was all about me.
Yeah.
You get so in your head and so far into the addiction, you almost like you need to have the substances in order to feel normal at this point. And so I had a drug dealer who lived in my apartment. What?
When you were in this cycle, sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
When you were in this cycle, were the first things in your mind when you woke up is when and where and how you were going to continue your fun things of
course. Of course.
That's right. Right.
Where am I going to get it? How am I going to get it? It was, you know what? Part of the addiction is the pattern, you know, like you get excited because you think, oh, I'm going to go get some drugs. And then you get the money to get the drugs and then you get the drugs and then you lay it out and you like cut it up and then you do the line. It's like all like this like specifically, it's all about the addiction, you know, all the different steps. And so after she was born, drink, using drugs, somehow was a mother, somehow went into work. But I remember one day I was always stuffy on the air, always stuffed up because at one point I couldn't even put any more cocaine in my nose because it was so clogged. I couldn't get any in and I wasn't fun or funny to be around. And I remember Jerry took me to lunch one day. I thought we were going to talk about contracts because our contract was coming up.
Yeah.
And he sits me down. We went to Shakespeare's Pub. I'll never forget this. We were at a table in the back. And he looked at me and he goes, we don't think we can work with you any longer.
Oh,
I was like,
man.
What? Oh, my God. I just burst out into tears. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, look at you. He goes, you look bad. You sound bad. You're not funny. And we can't work with you anymore. And so I begged and begged and begged, please give me another chance. Please. I'm so sorry. It's my allergies. I don't know what's going on with my nose. I'm going to go to a doctor. It's, you know, I don't know why I'm so skinny. I don't know why I'm losing weight. Of course I'm lying.
Yeah.
I know why.
Yeah.
So they gave me another chance. And that was about, that was in 2000. So Evan, I'm trying to get up to 2007 because Evan, my daughter, was almost 3 years old at that point.
What about your smallest, your son? Your son is a couple years older?
He's 5 years old at this time. Yeah, he's a couple years older than she is.
Okay.
And, you know, there were times when I would pick up the kids. I'd bring a Roader with me, you know, a road drink. I'd put it in my – I'd take like a cup that's from McDonald's or whatever, fill it with Coke.
Absolutely.
And this time, I'd moved on from wine. Now I'm on to vodka.
Yeah.
Easier. Don't we – it always seems to boil down to vodka, right? Like –
Well, you know, I was just the other day trying to tell somebody what it's like to have an open cup with pure vodka in between your legs and have a beer ready to open off to your right on the passenger side, and you're driving 25 miles across town. That was no stranger to me.
Oh, no. No, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, picking up the kid, there were, oh God, it's sick. I hate telling, I kind of hate telling this story because it, I hate that I did these things, but so I guess I still have a little shame and guilt about it all, but I try not to. Oh my God, I'm going to start crying.
No, feel free. And listen, real quick, let me stop you. You know what you're doing here now, and you've done this a million times, whether you're at meetings or talking personal to someone, what you're doing now is completely normal. In a way, we're bringing up our past, and it's so like darts being flung at our heart. But what you're doing right now, and you know this, is you could be saving lives when someone hears this. Absolutely, without a doubt.
Well, I'm thinking that if I was a mom of two young kids mixed up in alcohol and crystal meth and pills at that time, now pills, there's got to be another mother who's doing, who's dealing with the same thing. There has to be.
Of course.
I'm not the only one. So that's why, you know, I was picking up the kids. I had some alcohol in my drink. I went and I picked up drugs one time with the kids in the back seat. Like, it just, you just, at that point, that's when I really had to do the drugs and alcohol to feel normal. In fact, before I'd go into work, when we were at iHeart, that was the last place we were at before I went to rehab, I would go into the Walmart parking lot before work. I would do a line of meth. I would take a couple of Vicodin and I would take a shot of vodka, and I'd feel normal enough to go into work.
Did you have the shakes at this point?
No, I never ever got the shakes because I don't know. I never really went without alcohol. So I never got the shakes. I think it's because I had all the other substances mixed in.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why, because it wasn't solely alcohol.
Well, you're stabilizing yourself kind of on your performing. Yeah. You're doing all that to make you feel 100% normal, which is crazy, but I understand
it
that.
Is.
Yeah. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. It's like a crazy vortex you're in. Like I was screaming from the inside out. Like I was screaming for help, but I couldn't get help because I was too embarrassed to say to anybody, I've got a problem. I was too.
Were you okay?
How am I gonna go away for?
Yeah. Oh, you know what?
You know, how can I be away?
Okay. Now, were you afraid, or did you just not want to give it up?
Both.
Yeah.
But I was mostly afraid because I knew I needed help. I knew it.
Yeah.
Right. I knew it. And I didn't know how much longer I could last doing what I was doing before I was either, like they say, you're going to end up dead or in an institution.
Yeah.
And it, I ended up in an institution, but I'll get to that. So it was really bad at the end, really very bad. And I couldn't ask for help. I didn't want to be off the air because I thought I was going to lose my job and I couldn't risk that. And so one morning or one day, my then husband found a bottle of pills in my car.
Yeah.
And he took them. And we got into a big fight over it. And I said, Dave, you don't, oh God, his name was Dave too. Sorry.
That's okay.
So was my dad. I have a lot of Daves in my life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He goes, look at you again. Look at you. You're begging for these pills back. And I go, you don't understand what's going to happen if I don't have those. I'm going to, you know, not feel good.
Yeah.
I don't care. Look at you doing in front of your kids, blah, 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 bad, bad, dad. So I was like, screw you. I went to bed and I stayed there. I called in sick for 2 days. The third morning I called in sick again because I was coming down off of everything because he had caught me sort of. And so we got into a huge fight that morning, huge fight. We were throwing things and we were pushing each other. It was bad. And, so I finally said, fine, I'm just going to kill myself then. And I didn't mean it, but I went into my closet and I called my best friend at that point. Well, he called the police.
Yeah.
And I was in the shower when they got there. I didn't realize he had called the police. And there are two police officers in my bathroom pulling me out of the shower. And they told me to dry off, get dressed, which I did. And they handcuffed me and walked me across the street to their car in front of all my neighbors in the cul-de-sac.
Oh man.
Oh my God. I was so scared. I didn't know what the hell. So they took me to County Mental Health, which is, oh my God.
Oh my God.
That is like where, you know, anybody, homeless people.
Yeah.
People like me, anybody. I mean, like everybody. And they gave me a drug test and they found that I had had crystal meth in my system. So my husband at the time was like, fine, she's not coming home until she gets help.
Yeah.
And so they transferred me to Mesa Vista Hospital, where I was on a 3-day hold, psychiatric hold. And then I stayed for an additional 7 days because they were waiting for a bed to open up at Hazelden. I went to Hazelden. Have you heard of Hazelden?
I have. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's where I went for rehab, but I had to stay in the I was in the dual diagnosis level or floor because they didn't have any room left in the chemical dependency floor. So I was up there with people who were bipolar and drug addicted and people who were schizophrenic and drug addicted. And it was very interesting because at that point I was completely sober. I completely sobered up those 10 days, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And I was just looking around and I was feeling so much better. I remember feeling better and finally eating real food and liking it and gaining some weight. And I just realized like, oh my God, what's going to happen? I'm not going to see my kids for a month, but I was like, I'm ready. I have to get help. This is how it has to happen. I'm willing. I was willing. I was ready and willing. And that's what it takes.
Can I stop you real quick? I have to tell you, because I don't want to lose this thought. When I was at McDonald's Center around our counselors, they looked at all of us and they said, if one of you says that you wake up and you want to kill yourself, don't do that unless you're ready to go into a room for 3 days with a, what they call it, hug me now vest. Or did they put some? It's like a rubber room kind of, isn't it?
And we slept on these blue plastic mattresses. Terrible.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just remember the first thought in my head was, oh my, because I'm claustrophobic. I'm like, oh, there's no way. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh yeah. They do not take that as a joke. Like if you say you're going to kill yourself, you know, you should call the police. He says that.
Yeah.
I mean, because you don't know if the person's serious or not. You have no idea.
No,
like, you don't do anything and it happens. I mean, oh my God. So I understand why he did that. I was like, I remember when I looked at him when the police were handcuffing me and I said, I'm never going to forgive you for this.
Yeah.
And, finally I was able to realize this is the only way it could happen was this way, to hit bottom.
Yeah, so you're starting to eat better, and you're not without any substance in your body for like 10 days. Yeah. Are you thinking to yourself right then and there that you've surrendered, that you're done?
Yes, I was done. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. You get this. So I thought I just had some problems and I got mixed up in some stuff and I had a falling out, and now I was better. I was back to myself and I'm normal, right?
Yeah.
And so I get to rehab, Hazelden, where we couldn't talk to the boys. There was men and women there, but we couldn't even look at the men, couldn't talk to the men.
Yeah, right.
It was very strict. The rules are very, very strict. And I remember we were sitting in a group one time and we had to open up, obviously, with like, hello, I'm Laura, I'm an alcoholic, right?
Well, yeah.
I couldn't say that for the first week I was there. I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. And then I started learning like all the things. Then the teaching started with all the steps and what it is to be an alcoholic and this. And then hearing other people's stories and realizing, oh my God, I'm just like her. And so finally I was able to say, hi, I'm Laura, I'm an alcoholic. Because I realized, oh my God, I 100% am. I 100% am.
Yeah.
And so from that point, I learned the steps were very much very detailed there. In fact, the first step where you're supposed to give it up or you surrender.
Yeah.
And realize that you're powerless over drugs and alcohol. They did this exercise where you had to write out 10 instances of what you intended to do. For example, I intended to go to a work party and talk to friends. What actually happened, I didn't make it to the work party. I got drunk at a guy's house before I went and passed out. And then the consequences to yourself and the consequences to other people. And yeah. We had to do this 10 times. And then it really just made you realize like, oh my God, what I intended to do turned out completely different because of this freaking disease.
Yeah.
And so it was a real eye-opener. So I completed 30 days at Hazelden, and I was ready to go back home. I thought I was all cured. I was ready. I was clean. I felt good. My then-husband said, if they tell you you need more treatment, you are not allowed to come back into this house. And I was like, okay, but they're not going to say that because I was an ideal student. So I went into my counselor's office, and she says, well, I recommend more treatment. I said, what? Why? And she's like, Laura, you are so impulsive. Your impulsivity is going to get you into trouble. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Well, she found out like we weren't supposed to bring food into our rooms, but I would go and steal like cereal boxes and like stick them in my bra and then go eat them in my room. Like I was impulsive like that. I'm totally impulsive. 100%. She saw right through me. So I found a place that was as close as possible to San Diego, and that was Newport, Sober Living by the Sea.
Oh, beautiful. I've never heard of it. Nice.
Oh my God, it was so great. I loved it. It was great because it was like rehab. We had a lot of classes, we had a lot of groups, and we had a lot of rules, but it was a lot more free. Like we had a bicycle that we could ride everywhere. We could go to the beach if we wanted to during our free periods. Like we had more freedom. So it was essential that I went there because it was taught how to live now in my recovery, how to shop, how to,
yeah,
you know, wake up, how to new habits, like how to do all this stuff now. So
yeah. How to try to be a normie, right?
Yes. It was imperative that I went there. So
now how long was this? How was this? Like a 3 month, a 6 month, however long you wanted to stay there, or how long was it?
I went for 2 months.
Okay.
So it's a total of 3 months of treatment.
A little steak and lobster every night over there by the beach.
Oh, yeah, I wish. more like frozen dinners. They gave us this card. It was so funny. We could shop at Albertsons, which is the main grocery store there.
Sure.
And they would cut off the tip of the card so that the people at the registers knew that we were the people in treatment and not to sell us alcohol or cigarettes.
No kidding. Yeah.
So we were obviously the kids in treatment kind of people. But
were you allowed visitors?
Yes. So that was great because my kids could come up and see me. And it was, oh my God, the first time I saw them, I remember just crying and being like, oh, I'm so sorry I left you for so long, but I'm better now and this is going to be awesome. And so I came when I was ready to leave Sober Living by the Sea. I was informed that I was not to come home because my husband wanted a divorce and I was not allowed to come home. I also found out that he cut me out of the bank account. He traded in my car. He did all this other stuff because I gave him power of attorney before I left. So he could cash my checks and stuff for the mortgage or whatever.
Yeah.
And he took advantage of that and did a lot of stuff. So I had nothing. I had nothing. No money, no place to live. So luckily, Tommy, who I worked with, little Tommy Sablon, who's also in recovery, he took me in for 6 months. I lived with Tommy for 6 months. He gave me his master bedroom. So, and then I eventually got to see my kids 2 days a week for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And then it got more and more. But the hard part started when I got out of rehab. That was the hard part.
Yeah.
Rehab wasn't hard compared to what I had to go through. And then a divorce, like, oh my God, I found out he was having an affair and like with my friend from school, like, oh my God, one of the school moms he was hooking up with. And it was horrible. So it was hard, but you know what? I was like, I will not ever. I'm not like, you can't, you're not supposed to say I'm never going to drink again. Cause it just seems too far.
Yeah.
I'm not going to drink today.
Yeah.
I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to see disappointment on my kids' faces. They are going through enough right now. There's no way I'm going to put them through that. And then I went to meetings very religiously. When I got back to San Diego, I found a sponsor right away. I did the steps. It took me a long time to complete them, but I did eventually.
And that's okay. There's no time limit on that. There should not be any time limit on doing the steps.
Well, I did a step a year. Let me put it that way. It took me like 12 years to get through the entire 12.
You know,
I kind of like skipped over. I had like one sponsor and then I'd have to start all over again, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, so for the last 15 years, I've just been living clean, sober, aware of my problem, aware that any minute I could be back in that vortex. All it would take is one drink and God only knows where I'd be, what I'd be smoking or drinking or snorting. You know what I mean? I can't do it. And I won't do that to myself. First of all, it has to start with yourself. Like, you have to be sober for you. And then you're sober for your kids. And then you're sober for your family. And then you're sober for your friends. You know what I mean? It has to start with you. You have to want to stay and be sober before you can take care of anything else. So sobriety for me comes first before anything. Before my kids, before my family. It has to.
It has to, let me ask you a couple questions real quick, and then we'll get back to where you're at. When you were arrested and taken away, were you overwhelmed by the support from some of the people that you worked with? Did they come and did they get a hold of you somehow?
When I left, get this, you're going to laugh at this. My husband at the time was convinced that the local media was going to get wind of me leaving for rehab and therefore was going to do news coverage on it. And he wanted it to go under the radar. So he hired a flight crew to take me on a private plane to Oregon. That's where Hazelden was.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him, look, nobody cares. Nobody cares that a traffic reporter from a morning show is going to rehab. Believe me, NBC does not care. But he was convinced. And so we were at the terminal and who shows up but Jeff showed up, Jerry showed up, Bob Bollinger showed up, Tommy showed up, Emily showed up, my friend. Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not- don't even worry, we're going to tell people that you have family issues you have to deal with and don't be stressed, you'll have a job. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was felt so blessed that was what I was most worried about, was my job. And for 3 months, that's what they told people.
Well, I will tell you this. You're wrong about people, especially in San Diego, about not noticing, because I was in that building when in your absence, and you know, we on the outside of that show didn't know what was going on, but the concern was that you were gone for quite a while. And you know, of course, people always say, oh, she may never come back. And a lot of people have their theories and crap like that.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and then you hear about someone saying something, you know, way after the fact. But I will tell you, since I was there and I was full on in my disease, that one of the suspicions and theories was that you were away getting help. And the only thing I can think of was, God, that must be tough. God, because I was so into my disease that I wasn't ready to give up alcohol. And I remember thinking, you know, you were missed. And every day I think that went by, people talked about it. And now they were there to tell you that your job was still for you. And when you came back, were you like blown away by the love and support from outside of the show?
I was. And I should tell you that right before I came back in my first, right before my first day on the air, I was still in Newport and I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to say when I go back on the air? Because if I admit that I'm an alcoholic and an addict, people are going to be like, you lied to us. You're a liar, you know, like, or they're going to be hateful and not accept me. I go, but I have to tell them where I was. I have to tell them the truth.
Of course.
So my counselor at the time goes, go to the beach, sit down, think about it, and write what comes out. Pray, and then write what comes out. And so I wrote this long letter and the letter on the air. And oh my God, the support was huge.
It was massive.
It was unexpected. I did not think it was going to be that big, but you know, if anybody's listening that is worried about people not supporting you, or like you're worried that you're just going to be blamed, and no, people love when people get help. They love a story of survival. Like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. They people are supportive by nature. You know?
Well, Laura, the odds aren't with us. The odds are not. We're not with you. The odds were not with me. And like you said, for anyone now that's listening to this, that's 2 days sober, think about what you're doing. Think about the grit and the will that you have to turn your life over and just to run it your way, you know, and in the way of recovery, AA or NA, whatever addiction brings, you're running your life top notch without any of this crap, like you said, day by day. And sure, the support that you must have been getting was probably the greatest thing, the greatest feeling.
Oh my God, it was so great. And you know what I forgot to tell you about, Dave?
Yeah.
I forgot to tell you about the person that killed themselves.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Okay. This was when I was at Hazelden, and this woman, she was like, she had been there for 3 months. And she was the perfect picture of recovery.
Yeah.
She spoke in the meeting so eloquently. She had this thing. She got it. And I looked up to her. Well, she got to go home. And so she left. And then we all had this dinner party because it was like right around the time we were about to be done with the program. And we had this dinner party and we got a phone call when we were all there, all the girls, and that she had committed suicide. What happened was she got on the plane to go home, drank, landed, checked into a hotel room and shot herself.
Oh my God.
She had three little kids and it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
We all were hugging each other and crying because we were like, this is out of control. This is out of control. This fucking disease is not a joke.
No, it's not. It's the insanity of the disease. Yeah.
Oh my God. It was the scariest thing. I just remember being terrified.
Yeah.
And that was another reason why I stayed sober. And realized how important it was for me to stay sober. Because who knows?
Did you ever relapse?
No.
Wow.
I didn't. But
because
by the time
Wow.
Well, I was so, I was done.
Yeah.
I was done. I had done it, and there wasn't time for me to relapse. I guess I was ready. I was 100% ready by that time.
Yeah. And that's the key to anyone that's listening right now. You'll know when you're 100%.
Yeah, you will.
Ready. You will. And you know what? Let me ask you a couple of questions. When you look back on your life and look at the amazing things you've done the last 15 years, do you ever, at least it was for me, when I went to recovery, I couldn't stand Freedom Ranch. I hated every single second of it. But I swear now I'm living out here in Bismarck. If I lived in San Diego, I'd go out to that place once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like you said on our podcast, when you go back to where you were when you got treatment, you don't have the bad memories. You have only good, fond memories.
Yeah.
Of being well and getting well.
And getting well. And you know what? Someone once told me when I went in, because I was scared like you. I was scared to death. I was like, I'm going to give up my cats. I'm going to give up because, you know, I'm such a goofball. I never had a girlfriend, really. And I'm like, I don't have that to worry about. But I don't. What about my job? What about this? What about someone told me, look at it as doing something for you and taking a vacation, taking like a year off, because all that stuff will be there when you come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I mean, we were very blessed that we got this, Dave. You realize that?
Oh, I am, and you know, I never, ever, ever, ever take it for granted. And
no,
one of my podcasts, and I tell people sometimes, and I joke around a lot and stuff, which I probably shouldn't, but I tell people sometimes that I talk to my best friend Dave once a week, and I tell him that I have. I tell them that every once in a while, I was going to ask you this too. I have the most vivid dreams of my life about picking up that drink and saying, well, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Let's try one more time. And I wake up and I get on the floor and I pray and I say, boy, wow, where did that come from? And some people would say, well, that's a bad sign. And I would always say, no, it isn't. That's my mind keeping me battle ready.
Absolutely. 100%. That's not a bad sign at all. I have dreams where I'm trying to do a line of cocaine and there's water and it gets all watery and I can't, like, or I have dreams where I am at a party and somebody offers me wine and I'll start to drink it. Then I'll wake up and I'm so happy. I wake up and I go, oh my God, that was just a dream. I didn't throw it all away. Thank God.
Isn't that something?
God. Oh yeah.
And I will bet you, I will bet you money that if I ask you this question, you're going to say exactly what I know that's going to come out of your response. Isn't it the greatest feeling now? You may have probably all the time now, or whenever you're at some place and someone recognizes you, sure, someone's going to say, wow, you were so great on that show. But the greatest compliment now is when someone says, hey, I listen to your story and I'm 6 months sober, or I'm a year sober, I'm 3 days sober. Isn't that the greatest compliment?
Oh my God, is it ever? I receive compliments sometimes like that from people who say, because of your story, because you were honest, I am now a year sober. Because you were able to do it, I was able to do it. Because you shared, I wasn't ashamed anymore. You know, it is the best feeling. Yeah, you could tell me all day long, oh, you look great in that outfit, or you were a superstar on Jeff and Jer, and I remember, that is great, but nothing is better than a compliment like that.
Wow.
To help somebody, that's what we're here for in lives, to help others.
Yeah.
You know, and if I love that now my story can help other people, and I hope then they can help other people with their story. You know, it feels so good being sober. I feel so clear-headed. I can do anything. Plus, I'm wondering if I was still doing what I was doing, what would I look like now? What would I freaking look like? Would I just be this haggard looking, probably wrinkly, horrible skin, gaunt, like hair falling out? Like, ew, I just... physically,
well,
in perfect health, which is thank God, because I'm sober.
Well, that's impossible for you to say how you would look, because If anyone does not know what Laura Kane looks like, she's a bombshell model blonde that's always looked the same, young and pretty and all of that. But the greatest thing about Laura was from the second I met her, she's so engaging and friendly. And the laugh that she had on this show was so, I want to say this word if I say it right, infectious. It was
infectious.
Yes, it was so engaging because Laura is a normal person. And that's the thing that sometimes people can latch onto. It doesn't matter if you're a superstar, doesn't matter if you're a rock star, doesn't matter if you're a brain surgeon. This disease will attack anybody.
Oh, that's what I noticed when I first went to rehab. There were doctors there. There were PTA moms. There were people who were living on the streets. It affects every single person, everybody in society, every level, every class, every dollar sign, every amount that somebody earns. It doesn't matter. It does not matter how rich or poor you are.
And exactly. And you know what? We all start out at ground zero. We all start out day number one. We go to day number two and day number three. And we're all living this this little voice in the back of my head sometimes that says, hey, look at that beer on the commercial. That looks, you know what? Yeah. Wouldn't that, my voice is always talking to me sometimes, and I'm glad it's there.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah. I see. And every once in a while, I go, God, it would be so nice to have a glass of wine on this pretty night and watch the sunset and on the beach have some wine or with a nice dinner, have a glass of wine with a really fancy dinner.
Yeah.
I sometimes get sad that I can't do that. But then I realize why. What does that add to the meal, first of all? And why it's not important.
No,
that wine is not important. It doesn't give me anything.
No. And I can, let me ask you this real quick and then I'll try to wrap this up. I've got a lot of friends that have told me before, I don't drink anymore, but I smoke pot here and there, or I like to smoke pot. And I don't like anyone in our program to judge anyone, because we are not someone to judge someone on their program. But it always, to me, I can't even take a Vicodin anymore. If I go to the dentist and they want to give me a prescription of Vicodin, I tell them I can't. I tell them I can't. Someone says, why don't you have a fake beer while we're playing golf? No, it's too close to the real thing. It tastes like beer.
In rehab, they told us, no, do not do that. Do not have the fake beers. Why would you?
No.
And don't take, you know, this or that. But they did say, if you are going in for a surgery, for example, if you are going in, then you are allowed to have the meds that they prescribe you. You just can't take them differently than prescribed. Now you can get, then there's those who get prescriptions that don't really need them. Then there's that whole thing. So they just, if you need surgery, you don't have to tell the surgeon, no, don't give me anesthesia or pain meds because I am an alcoholic. I mean, you should tell them for sure that you are, so they know how to deal with your pain management after. But you just going in for the dentist, you don't need a Vicodin to go to the dentist. Come on.
No. No, I mean, years ago, I would have craved it. I would have made up excuses.
I would too. Oh, yeah. And you know? Any mind altering substance is not right.
Not right.
Pot, no.
Can I tell you a real quick story? Have you ever had Norco?
Yes.
Okay. I'll tell you the people that I was living with. Co. Remember Co?
Yeah.
Co and her boyfriend Mitch, they took me in when I had no place to go. And I lived there for 4 or 5 years in their roof.
You did?
Yeah. They're like when Tommy took you in. Mm-hmm. And they took me in and I became a stupid bill collector for 3 years because I had nothing else to do. But I wrenched my back on a Super Bowl Sunday. I don't know how many years it was. And it was in my first, second, or third year of recovery. And so I went into the emergency room, and it turns out that I had a block in my heart, if you can believe that or not.
In your heart?
I have three stents in my heart right now, if you can believe it or not. So when I got out, they gave me Norco. Uh-huh. And Mitch who is in the program, Mitch, said, "All right, I've got your Norco. I'm going to give you one a night." And they gave
Good.
15. I'm going to give you one a night. The first one, I like craved it. I loved it. I loved it. I sat there waiting for that time, and it was great. The second one, second night, even great. Third night, fourth night, About the last time I took the bottle, 15 days later, I took the pill 15 days later, it didn't do a damn thing. And a voice said, "There's your keys over there. Mitch and Co are gone in Las Vegas. Why don't you go down and grab a beer?" And that's when I went to a meeting instead. I drove out to Freedom.
Good.
I'm not doing that.
Always go to a meeting instead. Always think, always play the tape forward. That's what I learned.
Yes.
When, okay, if you do go to the bar, if you do get that beer, then what's going to happen?
Yeah.
All these bad things.
Yes. So
think before you act. Think, okay, instead of going to a bar, I need to go somewhere. I need to get out of here. Let's go to a meeting.
Perfect. Yeah.
Oh. Perfect. And don't you, action.
Don't you feel so welcome when you go to, I don't care where the meeting's at. I don't care if it's in a different state. When you walk through the doors of AA, for me, literally, it feels, this is corny, but literally I feel like I'm home.
Oh, absolutely. Because you're with like-minded people.
Yes.
No matter what, you definitely have the same mindset.
Laura, what can you tell everybody to wrap this up? What can you tell everybody what you've learned? What can you tell someone that's listening to this going, "Man, I know I need to stop, but I'm scared. I'm on the fence. Maybe they've got a family member that's really going through hell." What can you tell someone about your experience that could lend a hand?
Look, if you have a problem and you know it and you need help, talk to somebody, ask for help, get it, do it now, because people will be supportive and respect you for it. Trust me. And life as a sober person is so much more beautiful and wonderful than I could have ever imagined. It is so wonderful being sober, and it feels so damn good, so much better than any high I've ever received or any drunk I ever was. And trust me, this too shall pass. It's as cheesy as it sounds, as cliche as that is, it's so true. It's so true what they say in AA, this too shall pass. What you're going through right now, your hard time, you get help, this too shall pass. Do it now.
The rewards of sobriety. Yeah, the rewards of sobriety are endless. There's a million.
You're so million. Right.
Listen, it's been 56 minutes. You've shared your story. When we hang up, if I push this end recording button, it might kind of end our conversation. I'm going to call you right back. But I just want to let everyone know that this is Laura Kane. Her podcast is Laura After Dark. Laura Kane After
Laura
Dark.
Kane
is that
after
right?
Dark. Laura Kane After Dark.
And you can find it where?
You can find it anywhere you find podcasts. Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeart.
The genius about her show, her podcast, is it's all her and Eric. It's all her personality. She doesn't always talk about recovery. She allowed me to blab for 48 or 50 minutes the other night. But she talks about fun stuff. For me, recovery is fun, but she talks about life stuff, like goofy stuff that she
dating
was
dating and whatnot.
It's all her life, and Eric, who's a very charming guy as well. Laura, I can't even tell you how much I appreciate you being on my podcast. It's a real honor.
Well, it's same. Likewise, it's a real honor, and I really hope that this rings true to somebody like that. I really hope that a light bulb goes off.
Well, I come out there twice a year, and when I do, I want us to get together and go for Chinese food or something cool like that.
Chinese food, okay.
I don't know why I just mentioned Chinese food. I'll tell you why. Because I'll tell you what I really want. We don't have like 6 roll tacos with guacamole and sour cream.
Oh God, yes, let's do that.
In San Diego, every 5 feet, there's a great Mexican food place. And every time I go out and I spend time with my best friend, I stay at his place. I ask him, "I want Mexican food, and I want to go to In-N-Out."
I bet. Yeah, those two things for sure.
All right, Laura, you hang on real quick. I'm just going to say goodbye to everybody.
Okay.
I'm hoping that people hear this. And I appreciate all the comments that people have made through her podcast. I was on her show last Tuesday night. Anybody that writes in, and by the way, There Is a Way Out is on my Facebook page as a group page. But if anybody has any kind of concerns about themselves or a friend of theirs, there is a way out.